Welcome to Cleveland Clinic's Health Extra Podcast, keeping you up to date on the latest news in health and medicine.
Now, again, I've introduced myself before, but my name is David Rothner. I'm the Chairman Emeritus of Child Neurology. Three things that I deal with mostly toward the end of my career are headaches in children, the neurofibromatosis, and patient education. And obviously what I'm going to tell you is going to be short and sweet. It's not going to be all inclusive, but again, there'll be time to ask Dr. Moodley some questions. As I said before, I use the term neurofibromatosis, plural, not neurofibromatosis, because there are at least five different types of neurofibromatosis. NF1, neurofibromatosis type 1, is obviously the most common, about one in every 3,000 babies born, over a million patients in the United States. To the best of my knowledge, more common than cystic fibrosis and muscular dystrophy combined. NF2, maybe one in 25,000 to one in 50,000, a completely different disorder, different chromosome, literally unrelated, that affects hearing. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. Segmental, I'm going to show you examples of this, is neurofibromatosis that affects one part of the body. Schwannomatosis appears not to be hereditary, but is in some way related, sort of, to NF2. And the reason is NF2 has schwannomas, schwannomatosis has schwannomas. Schwannomatosis can be limited to one part of the body, the arm. I saw a police officer the other day who just has it limited to one arm, and can be limited to the spine. So it's an interesting disorder. And then there are some rare variants. So for example, I haven't seen one in years, but just the other day, I saw a father who has nothing but café au lait spots, two of his children who have nothing other than café au lait spots, no other manifestations of NF. And that's in one part why you need an expert, because there are so many variations on a theme. I'd like you to meet Dr. Friedrich Daniel von Recklinghausen. This is the man who named the disease von Recklinghausen's disease that it used to be called. My understanding is he was as mean as he looks. So I'm glad I wasn't one of his students, although some of my residents think I'm that old. But basically, let me tell you what he thought. It's kind of interesting. He thought NF1 was the external manifestations of neurofibromatosis, and NF2 was the internal manifestation. So he thought they were the same disease. But that's not true, and he was wrong. Now, did we lose the picture? I can't see it. Okay. All right, so it's not on my screen, just so you know, back there. So I'll speak from here and hope that you can hear me. Now, let's go this way. All right. At least three types of NF are hereditary. They run in families. And we're going to talk about that, and there's a symposium or a breakout session on genetics. An autosomal dominant means if a kid has it, no video found. Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. That an autosomal dominant means that if your kid has it, it maybe came from one of the parents. And half the cases of NF that we see, NF1 and NF2, the parent and a child has it. What about the other cases? Well, you're going to hear more about that later, but this is a very common gene that mutates. In other words, you could have NF and neither your mother nor your father had it. It could affect the peripheral nervous system, the nerves, the central nervous system, the brain, the bones, the endocrine or glandular system, even the vascular system. And the two main types are NF1 and NF2. As you see, the statistics are NF1 is much more common. Both can be autosomal dominance. Both can occur without your parents being involved. And in this particular case, and Dr. Cohn will talk more about it, we've identified which chromosome the disease is on. Now, what's interesting about that is if NF1 is on chromosome 17 and NF2 is on chromosome 22, they can't be exactly the same disease. So that's an important piece of information that didn't develop until more recently, and dear old Dr. Van Recklinghausen in Germany didn't know about that at all. Now, when there's an abnormal gene, it makes a gene product, and that product might affect the way tumors grow, benign or malignant. It may affect the way bony abnormalities occur. It may affect all of these things, and you're going to hear more about that later. And when I talk to you about clinical science, that's how patients present, that's much different from basic science. And the basic science is going to involve the understanding of the chromosomes, the gene product, the function of the gene, because there is where the drugs are going to come that are going to help you prevent the abnormalities that are occurring. And as I said, we're not there yet. So what I want to start with briefly is talking about neurofibromatosis type 1. The National Institutes of Health many years ago and then subsequently held a conference. And let me tell you a little bit about the conference. Kind of interesting. They set up these criteria. So it's very interesting. A lot of doctors, a lot of people practice medicine as if it was a cookbook. You got to have so much, so much, so much. And you and I know that the best cooks don't follow the cookbook. And so it is with neurofibromatosis type 1. There ain't no baby born that has all of these manifestations. These manifestations may occur over time, over years. So the earliest manifestation I'll show you in a minute is the spots. Well, you come to some doctors, they say he has spots, but he has none of these other things. He or she has no neurofibromas. He or she has no plexiforms. He or she has no freckling. He or she has no Lish nodules because they don't show up until you're 16 or 17. They have no bony lesions. They have no relatives, so you can't have NF. And that's a mistake. These kids may have NF, but the other manifestations haven't shown up late. And the other thing is that we could have 15 people lined up all with the same kind of NF. One kid's got spots only. One kid's got bone changes. One kid's got this. One kid's got that. So this is from an orthopedic clinic down in Cincinnati. Dr. L. Crawford, who's a famous pediatric orthopedist in this area, and you could see that many of the children presented to his clinic with different manifestations. That's why we need people who know something about NF. Let's talk about these spots. I saw a kid the other day who had two spots. Well, a lot of normal people have two spots and don't have NF. And that's important to know. The spots are usually present at birth, but not visible at birth. They're very pale. And then in 6 months, when it's summertime and the mother had the kid out in the park, then the spots show up. As the kid grows, you can get more spots. You can get darker spots. But the spots often grow with the kid. And once they grow with the kid, they become obvious to the parent. They are at some point or another, and I think they fade when people get to my age, in 99% of the patients. Children before puberty have smaller ones and fewer. Kids after puberty have bigger ones and more. They are randomly distributed anywhere in the body. But you know the least common place? The face. Maybe because the face is only 10% of the body, but it's the face. So we have to undress the patient. And what I routinely do, which seems kind of funny, is I undress the mother and the father. One time I undressed the adoptive mother, and I got in trouble. But So now I ask if you're the mother or father of this kid, and I undress them and I look for spots. Why? Not a blood test, but a clinical exam is the best way to find out if the mother or father have the disease. These spots were put there by God to help me identify patients. They are no threat to health. They do not turn into cancer, and they are simply there. That's important to know. Now, Dr. Bruce Korff, who used to be in Boston, is now at Alabama, is a major author and researcher in this area. And he looked at 41 children under the age of 6 with cafe au lait spots. And within a few years, 60% developed the confirmatory signs of NF. So just to point out that a lot of kids can just have the cafe au lait spots and no other manifestations early in life, but they may develop the other ones later in life. And the diagnosis was usually established within 3 years, usually before the age of 5. In some of my patients, it takes longer than that. And this is a cafe au lait spot, but this is a friend of mine who has really two problems. He's got these cafe au lait spots, but he's got a sunken chest. Now, as I said, it's okay. A lot of people have one or two spots. And again, my daughter-in-law wanted me in when my 6 grandchildren were delivered, and I wanted no part of that. I actually would have liked to have been 50 miles away. But then she wanted me to come in and examine them if I wouldn't be there. And when I go in to examine my only granddaughter, on her leg, she had this. So for the next 6-8 years, I was waiting for more to show up, but none did. So a lot of people have one spot. But if you have 6 or more, that's important. They're usually a smooth barter. They're called cafe au lait, which means coffee and milk. And again, the patients can have other irregular pigmentary changes, but these are the cafe au lait spots. Now, the other thing is people with NF sort of freckle where the sun don't shine, okay? In other words, all of us people freckle if we go out into the sun, but you don't freckle where the sun don't shine. Well, where don't the sun shine? In my day, it didn't shine under your armpits and in your groin. Now, the way they wear bathing suits, the sun shines almost everywhere. So basically, this kind of freckling is unusual in regular patients, but in NF patients, it's common in the armpit, in the groin, under the breast, and in the entire body. So we have an adult woman here. She's got a pretty typical cafe au lait spot. She's got some neurofibromas in the areola of the breast. But look at this armpit here. It's very, very freckled. So again, that doesn't happen in patients without this disorder in most cases. So we use this as one of the diagnostic criteria. Now the neurofibromas, and you're going to hear from Dr. Pepe a little bit later, can be little ones, can be very few, can be very many. Invariably, when I tell a mom that her little one-year-old has NF, she goes immediately to the web. Now, the web has caused a lot of trouble for me. First of all, people print off my articles, and they say, how come you said this in your article and it doesn't apply to my kid? So they try to catch me. Second, they invariably, if somebody's got a machine, if they could stop it, invariably, they go to the web, and what do they see? The most advanced case of NF, and it scares, excuse me, the bejesus out of people, all right? Well, not everybody has those problems, so we have to take our time, and we have to wait and see. These neurofibromas can develop on any nerve, and in the inside of your body, on blood vessels, can be all different size and shapes. So they could be relatively small, and Dr. Pepe will tell us how to deal with these when they interfere. Now, especially if they're on your wrist or on your neck, on your collar, or by your shoe, you might want to do something. Sometimes you want to leave them alone. Now, plexiform neurofibromas are a different kind of neurofibroma and are really more difficult to deal with. They're kind of like a sponge. They may be present in childhood. They may affect the face and cause disfigurement. They may compress nerves, and they may actually become malignant. So So what I tell my patients, if a neurofibroma grows fast, gets hard, or causes pain without being mashed, then they should let me know. And I saw one here a few weeks ago that developed into a size bigger than a grapefruit within 3 weeks, and unfortunately, that was a malignant one. It can involve the eye, and this is a problem because early in life, the kid could suppress vision in that eye, so we have to deal with it. It can involve on the hand, and it can be quite large. This is the elbow, this is the arm, and frequently there's pigmentation. So we need experts who have done this before, not saying, I read the book last night, I can do this tomorrow. I want somebody to operate on mine, my heart, my blood vessels, who's been in there 300 or 400 or 500 times before. Generally, that means they're better. So we want to develop expertise in this area. Now, the other thing is these Lish nodules. Like these cafe au lait spots, the Lish nodules were put there by God to help us identify people with NF. They are abnormalities of the iris of the eye. They are age-dependent. Babies usually don't have Lish nodules. So when I send a baby to the pediatric ophthalmologist for an eye exam, I'm looking for optic nerve glioma, but I'm not looking for Lish nodules. Then I think patients by 16, 18 to develop these, but the doctor has to know what they're looking for, and they have to use what's called a slit lamp to identify them. Now, when do I really like to use this? Let's just say that one-year-old kid came to my office. He's got cafe au lait spots. I think he's got NF1. I undress his mother and father in the office, no cafe au lait spots. If I would send off a blood test, very difficult, very expensive to Dr. Korf, that's one way. But if I send them to a good ophthalmologist and neither of the parents have spots, scoliosis, or Lish nodules, I'm 96% accurate that they don't have NF. And I feel very, very confident about that without ordering blood tests on everybody. And you see, as the patient gets older, they get bigger. So the Lish nodules, this is with a special photography, are these brown spots in the eye that develop in the colored part of the eye, whether you got blue eyes or brown eyes or green eyes, doesn't make any difference. And again, those are very useful, but thank God cause no disease. Optic nerve gliomas are a tumor of the optic nerve, and there are really two abnormalities. One is it's a hamartoma, which means it's not a real cancer or tumor or growth, but it's just bigger and grows along with the child. One is an optic nerve glioma, which can cause neurologic and visual symptoms and occurs more frequently in people with NF1 than in other disorders. And again, when we do the MRI scan, we see the enlarged optic nerve, and that helps us make the diagnosis. And that's why I send every kid that I see to a pediatric ophthalmologist. Now, some of these children may develop progressive disease, tumors, hydrocephalus. They have to be watched regularly. But very importantly, and we're learning more and more, and one of the breakout sessions with Dr. Ehrenberg is on learning issues as they relate to NF. We have a lot of concerns about this, and we're just learning, and there's a little bit of research, but no hard data. Namely, 30 to 40% of children with NF have learning problems, so I like to get them into early intervention. A slightly higher percentage in the general population, 3% are retarded, and it's a little higher in patients with NF. Now, a lot of people think that the NF problems with learning are due to these white lesions in the brain, and they're called UBOs, or unidentified bright objects, or hamartomas. And again, there's argument. Dr. Korf does not routinely do an MRI on kids. I do. Skeletal findings are present in up to 40% of kids with NF. They may include pseudoarthrosis. They may include scoliosis. And they may include chest wall deformities. And again, we identify early and we try to be helpful. Many of the patients, and Dr. Moodley and Dr. Friedman are studying these areas, have vascular disorders. It may involve the renal artery going to the kidney, arteries going to the brain, the aorta, the heart, etc. Many of our patients develop high blood pressure. Again, early recognition and treatment are important. So we think for NF1, it's terribly important to follow these patients regularly, have the patients have the ability to call you. Some of the tests that I routinely do are quite controversial. Not all my colleagues agree that I should be doing these, but again, I think it's of value. Early management of scoliosis and tibial bowing is important. Early intervention with regards to learning issues, critically important. Seeing somebody like Dr. Pape here for disfigurement early on is important. Seeing Dr. Cohn for treatment of tumors. Now, genetic counseling, important. Support groups, important. Psychological and social support, terribly important. Now, I want to just change completely from chromosome 17 to chromosome 22. What old Dr. Recklinghausen thought was the central form is really a separate disease, and the most common manifestations are tumors on the eighth nerve. These tumors on the eighth nerve can cause headaches, they can cause hearing loss, facial weakness, dizziness, balance difficulties, and again, usually appear in individuals in their mid-30s, late-30s, early-40s, and they're called acoustic neuromas. Now, if you have bilateral acoustic neuromas, meaning on both sides, then you've got this disorder. We have just concluded a review of 25 of our cases of NF2 in children, and we think that by identification of certain signs and symptoms, we may be able to identify the problems earlier and prevent deafness. So you can suspect the diagnosis. First, if you got a mom or dad with NF2, you must test their children and continue to follow their children. If they're 30 and they got a 65-year-old pop or mom, we want to examine those patients as well. And again, they may have a hearing loss, they may have balance problems, ringing in the ear, headache, etc. And again, if you do hearing tests, have eye exams, have MRI, you'll be able to find them. Now, they don't have cafe au lait spots. They have these soft bumps on the skin. Soft bumps right here, sometimes with some hair coming out of it. And when you do an MRI, this is your nose, these are your eyeballs, and these are the tumors on the eighth nerve. So again, having MRI, having these special tests has allowed us to diagnose these patients earlier and accurately, more accurately, and sometimes to save hearing. Almost every child that I've seen with NF2, they have no symptoms related to their back or their spine, but when I do MRI on the spine, I see that they have spinal tumors. And that's, in a way, good because we've identified them early and we can treat them without problems. So we recommend yearly examination, patient education, maybe even presymptic radiologic screening, and for sure, the genetic counseling. And I just want to go on and finish with segmental NF. Segmental NF means that the problems, the cafe au lait spots or the freckling, are localized to one part of the body. This is a genetic in certainly less than 10% of cases, but again, is probably a mutation of the NF1 gene on chromosome 17. And the manifestations can be either outside spots, or they could be pigmentary changes localized to one side of the body, or they could actually involve nerve, this leg, inside the body, which can be painful and cause weakness. There are other variants of neurofibromatosis, which are very, very uncommon, and I'd be happy to talk to any of you about them, should you so desire. I want to thank you very much, and then I'll help introduce the next speaker.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and does not replace the advice of a physician. For more information about this topic or to listen to other Cleveland Clinic podcasts, log on to clevelandclinic.org/podcast.